It's time for Sports Central with Corey Geiger. Brought to you by J.M. Boswell Pipes and Tobacco on 96.1 Hank FM. Tune in over the next hour as Corey talks about the teams you care about in Central Pennsylvania. Call in now, 814-946-0435. That's 814-946-0435. Now, Sports Central with Corey Geiger. Brought to you by J.M. Boswell Pipes and Tobacco on 96.1 Hank FM.
All righty, folks. Hopefully everybody is doing well. This is Sports Central. I'm Corey Geiger along with Nathan Forlina. Nathan, something absolutely unbelievable happened today. You mentioned it a couple of minutes ago. We're going to discuss it here a little bit and kind of have an offshoot discussion about certain things, but I found out a few hours ago, if you don't know this yet, this is stunning news to me, given the world that I grew up in and the industry that I grew up in. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is going out of business, which is, you know, maybe that doesn't necessarily impact a lot of your lives right now today. But I want you to think about our society, our country, where we are now, what newspapers have meant to our country for decades, centuries. And one of the great newspapers in this country has been the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I mean, it is a legendary, it has not been in recent years. Quite frankly, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette has been a laughable joke because their owners, the Block family, are complete idiots. But that's I'm not getting into the demise of the paper. The fact that the newspaper is completely going out of business, they're going to cease operations the first week of May. And it gets back to something we were talking about earlier in the week, Nathan, with the passing of Jim Lane. For most of the lives of everybody listening to this show, including your parents, your parents in their late 40s, right?
Mid. I don't want to date them too much.
That's good. Even your parent, one generation removed from a college kid, they grew up with newspapers and the nightly news on TV. This is how you got your news. Those entities are almost useless now. In a lot of ways, okay? And that's why the newspaper industry is clearly on its deathbed and has been for a long time. I haven't watched local TV news, an actual broadcast, 7-8 years. I'll watch if TAJ has a story, you know, that I see that's on their Facebook page that's interesting, I might watch that minute-long story. But to sit down and watch a 30-minute newscast on TV, when was the last time you ever did that? Ever? Have you ever watched a 30-minute newscast on local news?
Usually it's because I'm not willingly turning it on. Usually,
right. You
usually
walk into your grandparents' house and it's on and nobody wants to turn the TV.
Bingo.
It on.
I'm sure when I get to my grandparents directly after this, I'm sure the night or the 5:30 news is going to be on and we're going to sit there and watch it while I'm eating
Interesting.
Dinner. So,
all right.
So, and then even at our house, usually it's on in the background, I'd say. Usually,
okay.
But more it's just for the weather. That's usually what people
Yeah, that's why they start with the weather.
Or if there's some story that we heard about, it's like, oh, maybe we want
right.
to get a little
weather
more.
Dominates local. It always has. What makes me sad is, and I'm not going to get too deep down this slippery slope because I could, but I don't want to. I just think we're a dumb country. I think we're a dumb country of ill-informed people. And if I'm talking to you specifically out there, own it or don't own it. I don't care. Do you know what's going on in the world? I'm not saying do you know what prism you're watching that's telling you what's going on in the world, one way or another, left, right, middle, up, down, whatever the hell. You're only getting part of what's going on in the world by any of these places. When I ask you if you know what's going on in the world, I'm asking you if you're willing to find all kinds of different places that you'll get information. Because you get information from one place, they're going to tell you part of the story. You get information from another place, they're going to tell you part of the story. When I ask all of you out there if you know what's going on in the world, And my guess is 80% of you don't. I think this is a dumb country. I think we're a really, really dumb country because we have alternative facts and state-run TV and all these angles and skews and propaganda, whichever side you're on. I'm not even taking a side. I'm telling you, whatever side you're on, you got to watch some of the other side. You got to at least get a different opinion, okay? You can't just go through life in a secular bubble of information that you find comfortable. And that's what newspapers did for the world for a century. And now that really doesn't exist anymore because, you know, you take a look at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, the Block family, the way they ran that newspaper, giant newspaper. Again, you can take issue. You can love or hate whatever newspaper, TV station, whatever you want. I'm not getting into the politics of it. I'm just asking you, do you know what's going on in the world? And right now, it's harder. I'll make some kind of crazy-ass statement. I think it's harder to know what's going on in the world right now than in like 1900, when we basically had no information. I think it's harder to know what's really going on when you've got 37 different angles telling you something.
I was just about to say, I feel like there's an overload of information.
Right, and so who the hell knows? If you look at the color red, in 1900, you knew what the color red was, okay? Now, you look at the color red, and depending on the 37 different sources of information that you're taking, you're going to get 37 different answers of what it is. It's maroon. It's dark pink. It's whatever. And I think the world is harder to live in like this than it used to be when, and again, I mentioned Jim Lane a couple times this week because what newspapers would represent is they would compile all of the information and give it to you at one time. And that's how you consumed things, or if you watched the nightly news. Now, you can get any information, any quote-unquote news that you want anywhere in the world at any time, and it's hard to know if any of it's true or not. It's hard to know what's true, what's not true. The way I usually go about it is I try to read one side, I try to read another side, I try to read a middle side, and then come to an idea of what the hell actually happened. So when I mentioned to you, all you old fogies out there, that the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is going to cease operations in 5 months, that's a scary thing to me. That's a really scary thing. Because it's happened in other places. It's going to continue to happen. I don't have any idea how in the world. I think we talked about this briefly before when I said, like, kids today growing up won't know what's real or what's not. I knew what was real growing up. I knew what facts there were and what was real because you could kind of trust, to a large extent, what was out there. Now, with all the AI, with all the fake videos, with all the fake stories, if you're a kid born today, I can absolutely understand how young people today could come to the conclusion that we didn't land on the moon. I can. As stupid as that is to older generations, because young people today, they're going to see videos of people landing on Jupiter. I promise you. They're going to see AI videos of people landing on Neptune, all right? They're going to see AI videos of an alien crossing into the Milky Way galaxy. How are they going to know between that and moon landing? And we talk about Tyler Harrow not believing anything before 1950. I just feel like it's a very sad. When I saw this news about the Post-Gazette, this was one long-standing, trusted, valuable news source that is going to go away. And as time moves on, all these trusts, because they can't stay in business. They can't stay in business. They just can't. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, they reported today they've lost $350 million over the last 20 years. $350 million. And so what's going to happen to our world when we wake up in 5, 10, 20, 30, 40 years and there are no newspapers, there's no nightly news, it's just this one propaganda network out there and another propaganda network out there and another propaganda network out there, and 300 million people on Twitter telling you the most ridiculous thing. How in the world is anybody going to believe anything?
For me, I think newscasts and stuff, I think that'll all, like nightly news, I believe will stick around. I do think newspapers are by the wayside right now. There's no chance of saving those just because some people really can't even read, which is crazy to say, but like people do not want to read. They'd rather just watch it, or they'd read a little excerpt they see online or something like that. So
it's called short attention span theater. We want to formulate our opinions based on seeing something for 5 seconds.
Exactly. People don't want to take the time to read an entire article. They want to read a headline, and that's what they judge and mold their opinion around at that point. But I do think nightly news will stick around. And you talked about the AI and stuff like that. I think the only way you combat this with young people is I think you got to start implementing it in school to be able to pick out what was real and what isn't. I do think I got a good sense of what is real and what isn't on the internet. Like, I can tell what's AI and what's not. I don't think it's
We're in like year two of it, Nathan.
I know.
Give it to year 22.
Give
it to year 122. So when we joke around about stuff.
But you can always tell the human element of something.
Can you?
I think you can.
In year two, you can.
In year two, I can.
Give it year 22. You won't know. You won't have any clue. You won't have any idea what's fake, what's AI.
You're right, potentially.
There's no way.
I'm not
saying you. I'm saying it will be so seamless. There's already, you ever heard of Tilly Norwood? Tilly Norwood is an AI actress.
Google
Tilly
Norwood.
She's a beautiful, kind of pseudo Jennifer Aniston looking girl. She's an AI actress. It's a fake being. She's been invented to be an actress in shows and movies and can do any emotion, any range of facial, I mean, anything in the world that a human being can do. And there's the people who have seen it in action will already tell you there's no way to differentiate that this is not a real person on screen. Give that 30 years. There will be no Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise and Denzel Washington. There will be thousands of Tilly Norwoods.
That would be insane. I'll tell you what, looking at this,
it's a good looking woman.
Well, I'm not saying about AI generated pictures being.
You won't be able to tell.
Corey, you can have your own fantasies over there you want.
Tilly Norwood, look it up. You can't tell. I've seen some videos. You can't tell.
It's some of these pictures are pretty bad, and you can tell from the pictures. But I'll tell you what, if I saw it in a movie, I don't know if I would be able to
tell.
I don't think I would be able to tell in a movie, but photos, you can tell if this is AI in some photos. But
the main thing I wanted to touch on with the Post-Gazette was, again, just losing out on information. Knowing some information doesn't make you a smart person. You have to be able to find an equilibrium of information. All right? You can trust what I say about Penn State football or trust what Nathan says about Penn State football, and you can believe whatever the hell you want to believe. You can go listen to Steve Jones, and you can trust what he says about Penn State football and believe whatever the hell you want to believe. Or am I right and Steve Jones is wrong? Is Steve Jones right and I'm wrong? No. It's an equilibrium of all things in between. Steve Jones knows more about Penn State football than any media member who's ever lived on this planet. Does that mean he tells you the information that is the truth and what you need about Penn State football? Absolutely not. You don't get any of that from Steve Jones. You get a watered-down version of what Penn State Athletics wants Steve Jones to tell you about Penn State football. So here you have a guy that's at every practice and knows everything in the world that's going on. He knows who recorded the video of Pat Kraft. I'm sure he knows who recorded it.
Did he say in a clip he did know?
He said it wasn't Drew Allen, but I'm sure he does know.
Okay.
I'm sure he does know. Is he going to tell you? No. Because that's not in the interest of Penn State football or Penn State athletics. If I knew, I'd tell you in a heartbeat. Does that mean that I'm right and he's wrong, or that he's right and I'm wrong? What I'm telling you is you have to find a middle ground of people, some people that know a whole lot of information and will tell you some people that don't know any information at all but will act like they know it and they'll tell you stuff. And you have to find, but most people are not willing to do that. They're only willing to listen to one source and then just come up with their own opinions. And that again, when you take away newspapers, you take away TV stations, you take away journalists on the ground doing the work, what you're left with is, well, I heard this guy say what this guy said, what he heard from this guy, what he heard from that guy, and his 14th cousin heard this, and that's what ends up being accepted as fact.
Yeah, and that's a scary thought if that is what the future holds. Hopefully we still get some journalistic standards in place and you have people doing their job and really reporting the facts. Like I said, and we've talked about, like, local feels like gives you the, like, newspapers and stuff, and a local aspect gives you kind of a middle ground, because if you're in a local area, you're trying to please everybody. You know, these national people are skewed one way or the other, but there are still people here who give you the right facts, the right information. That's the people that you should trust. And whenever you got businesses like the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette going out of business, you can almost see the writing on the wall. And hopefully that is not the truth with, or the facts with everything locally, because that's a scary thought to think that we're only going to be getting one side or the other and we're not getting anything in the middle ground.
I'm gonna quote the beautiful and talented Christy Swanson from Ferris Bueller's Day Off in 1986. This is how things work. Because have you ever seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yes.
Okay. He was never sick. Matthew Broderick, actually, Ferris Bueller is actually a psychopath. Really, if you read about Ferris Bueller and the way he manipulates Cameron and the way he manipulates everybody in that, he's a sick, twisted.
You love looking way too into these characters.
He's a sick, twisted freak. There's a fan theory out there that Ferris Bueller's Day Off is actually kind of like Groundhog Day. In Groundhog Day, we know Bill Murray has lived this day over and over and over. There's kind of a long-standing theory that Ferris Bueller has lived his day over and over and over, and that's why he knows how to manipulate. Anyway, so he was never sick. There was no one in the world knew that he was sick. But here's what Christy Swanson said when she's asked in class by Ben Stein. She says, "He's sick. My best friend's sister's boyfriend's brother's girlfriend heard from this guy who knows this kid who's going with a girl who saw Ferris pass out at 31 Flavors last night." So that's what you end up getting, is a ninth-hand account. By the way, do you know what 31 Flavors is? You don't, do you?
Baskin-Robbins?
Oh, you got it! How'd you know that?
I was just making sure that was the correct answer before I said it out loud.
That's good.
It's in their logo. If you look at the Baskin-Robbins logo, it has 31 in it.
That is good.
They got 31 different flavors.
I am stunned that you knew what 30... Now, that's made my day. I was all ticked off about the Post-Gazette stuff, but the fact that a 21-year-old knows what 31 flavors is, that's pretty impressive.
I think more people my age would know what that is than you would think.
I would not think, because they used to go by 31 flavors way, way back in the day. Then it kind of became Baskin-Robbins, and obviously they had more than 31 flavors.
Yeah.
Jerry, I'm stunned that Nathan knew what 31 flavors was, man. Does that surprise you?
No, he's a smart guy.
What can I say?
He's smart something.
Yeah. Hey, I wonder, by the way, I think I'm one of the few people that I work with that get the out to the mirror.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I didn't call for that, but I had a couple questions on Penn State quarterback stuff. You might have answered these, and, you know, I haven't heard, but do you think it was a great loss that we, Bronkemeyer went somewhere else? I mean, he was okay quarterback. It's not like we're losing a superstar, or am I missing something?
Let's both give our opinions on this, because I think Nathan may disagree with. I think Ethan Grunkmeyer will be better than Drew Aller. So I do think that is a. I thought the way Grunkmeyer handled things and some of the passes he at least attempted, because again, my beef with Drew Aller was he never even tried to do anything. Mm-hmm. Now, was that him or was that Franklin? Yeah, that might be Franklin.
That's a low bar, though.
Yeah, that sure. But the kid they're getting, and Nathan, I'm sure, can speak much more than I can about Rocco Beck from Iowa State. He's got a lot of Ethan Grunkemeyer wasn't going to play next year anyway, because the kid they're bringing in from Iowa State is going to be the starting quarterback. I do think it's a significant. I think Ethan Grunkemeyer is going to be a really good college quarterback. But it goes back to what I said yesterday, Jerry. I bitched all day yesterday about the transfer portal and NIL and how I kind of hate college football now. Because to be honest with you, even if Ethan Grunkemeyer had stayed at Penn State for one more year, you would think he would have been gone then, or gone the next, or at some point he's going to be gone. So if I could build my program for the next 3 years with Ethan Grunkemeyer, yeah, Jerry, I'd take that. But, I mean, I don't see that. I mean, the guy might have been there. If he'd have played well next year, he'd gone somewhere else the next year and gotten his $3 million.
But I don't think it'll be hard to replace him. I don't think he's one of those quarterbacks that was that good that you can't find someone else that'll be just as good.
All right, so here's my opinion. I'll quickly touch on it. So Grunkemeyer, I think, was trending in the right direction. He did look better than Drew Aller. However, you know where he's going to? He's going to Virginia Tech with James Franklin, which I do not think is going to bode well.
I don't understand. I mean, you just saw how James Franklin killed Drew Aller's career.
Exactly.
And then you're going to go down there.
So that's why I do not think he'll reach his fullest potential. I don't think he'll be better than Rocco Beck can give us this year. I think Rocco Beck's a really good quarterback. Iowa State, they've developed a couple of nice quarterbacks in the last years. One of them right now is Brock Purdy in the NFL, who is absolutely killing it. So I think Matt Campbell knows what he's doing. They also got another guy in there as well in a package deal that came with them. So they got their quarterback of the future. So Gronk really had no time. He wasn't going to get his shot at Penn State, it felt like. But going to Virginia Tech, I think, is going to absolutely kill his college career. And I hope I'm wrong, because
they're
looked,
still looking for Bo Prabula too, right? Are they going to get Prabula?
As far as I'm aware,
that would make the most.
So.
No?
I don't think so. I believe he was on visits.
Well, that Nebraska situation with the Minshew deal, you know, leaving them high and dry. Now they're probably looking at Prabula as well. Anyway, Jerry, what was your other question? Because that's a good one.
As far as Drew Aller goes, I know he's going to turn pro, but do you think he would have benefited by transferring and playing another year in college so that he could get his reputation back, hopefully?
It's not even just so much. He needed a different kind of coaching, Jerry. Again, I've talked about this for years. I think since day one, since he arrived, James Franklin babied him and coddled him to the highest degree. He overcoached him in a tremendous way, and in a tremendously bad way, by overemphasizing protecting the football at all costs. And he neutered the guy. He neutered the guy. He cut him off. He took a pair of shears and he cut him off. That's what he did. He neutered Drew Aller by making him a game manager quarterback. And I don't understand in this day and age, you know, when you need your quarterbacks to make plays. I don't get that philosophy at all.
Well, that's why I'm asking. Do you think he would have been smarter to transfer someone else and play another year in college?
Well, you mean before last year or like, I mean, now he can't.
No,
he's out of eligibility.
Now.
Well, he's out of eligibility. He can't.
Oh, I thought he had more eligibility.
No, Drew.
He had another year.
Drew's done. Drew's finished with eligibility. Unless the NCAA approves the fifth-year deal, that is still kind of going through the courts right now. But I don't think it's going to be done before April and May for the draft. So as of right now, Drew Aller, he's out of eligibility.
I would have been very interested to see what Matt Campbell would have done if Drew Aller would have been in the cards with eligibility, if he would have taken him back for his fifth year, or if he was still always going to go the Rocco back
route. As critical as I am of Drew Aller, I still think the fault lies in James Franklin. Like I said,
you still think the upside's there.
The skill set is there. He just he was trained wrong as a quarterback. He was trained to go out there and throw the ball safe every single time. Did you hear me say yesterday that the throw Lamar Jackson made in that Ravens game, we've never seen Drew Aller even attempt a throw like that, because Drew Aller he's not been coached that way. Could he potentially do that? Maybe. But he spent 3.5 years getting coached by James Franklin, again, who neutered him to the degree that they would not let him play quarterback.
Aller,
he was merely out there to be a game manager.
Aller probably needs 3 to 4 years to marinate in the NFL before he's going to be able to get to a position in which he might be able to start for a team.
And you don't get 3 or 4 years really anymore. You know?
I was going to say, at that point, your rookie deal's up anyways, which is whenever these teams want you on it so they can
Sean
build around
I mean, look, Sean Clifford got drafted, and he played one game, hungry. I think Drew will get some chances, but, you know, there's nothing that I've seen from Drew Aller with Penn State that leads me to believe that he can play quarterback in the NFL.
I agree.
Do you, Is he projected? Where's he projected to be draft? I mean,
if I had to guess third round, he probably goes third round.
I'm obviously in a day three.
There's
guy.
Probably questions about his injury and how healthy he'll be at the combine and everything like that. But I'd say third round right now.
What was his injury?
Ankle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he broke his ankle.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Jerry. That's good stuff, man. 9460435.
The thing is with this draft too, there's a lot of these guys who have fallen off this year. The Garrett Nussmeyers, the Cade Klubnicks. It's gonna be interesting to see where NFL scouts see these guys and if they're actually day one or day two guys. I mean, these guys are probably gonna be day two guys, but even if they are day two guys in the second or third round, is a team gonna take a chance on them? Because that's still a high overall pick in which you're oftentimes getting a player that is
you're,
in your rotation.
You're expecting them to do something.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to get in trouble here, I'm sure. Caller number two, I see what you want to talk about. I'm envisioning myself saying something that's going to get pissed people off, but go ahead, we'll see where this goes.
Well, what did I say? All right.
It says, new is news or opinion?
Right. I think you guys would agree with this. Every major news organization leans one way or the other, and you can immediately tell when you put it on. I scan all of them, but the same story, if you go to the major news organizations, let's say five of them,
all over the place,
you will get a totally different view. And AP is a lot in the newspapers. I know it's a lot in the Mirror. Mirror definitely leans left, in my opinion. So that's just my comment that I don't know if there's anyone who ever actually gave the news. Even Walter Cronkite leaned left. I didn't know that when I was a kid. I thought he just was telling me exactly what was going on.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known. I'm not. I grew up with Peter Jennings, Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, those guys. And here's where I'm going to get myself in trouble. There are things that are news and are facts and then get bastardized by people's opinions of the facts that we see. I'll make the most basic example. If 2 + 2 = 4, and we all know that 2 + 2 = 4, the teacher writes on the blackboard, 2 + 2 = 4. We all see 2 + 2 = 4, right?
Yep.
That's a fact, right? There's not an opinion in 2 + 2 = 4, right?
I hope not.
When you have hundreds of people breaking into the United States Capitol, that is 2 + 2. That is a fact. That cannot be disputed by an opinion on Fox News or CNN or MSNBC or anything else. Your eyes don't deceive you. It's 2 + 2. Those are facts. So what ends up happening is you get skews and angles of, oh, now there's insurrectionists in the crowd lighting people up. And they want you to believe that what you saw did not happen. The teacher wants you to believe that the 2 + 2 that you see on the blackboard, one of those is not a 2. It's not a 2. It's some Greek symbol for the word tree. And so it's not 4. So your eyes tell you, based on every level of common sense, that 2 + 2 = 4. That's what the blackboard shows. You have a 2, you have a plus sign, you have a 2, it equals 4. There's no ambiguity there. There's no ambiguity when you have hundreds of people breaking into the Capitol. That's insurrectionists, they're criminals. The ambiguity comes in when whoever the hell wants to tell you which angle or which side. You see what I'm getting at? This is where I said I was going to get myself in trouble. This is where people who you see things with your eyes and people want to tell you different things happened so that you don't believe your eyes. That, to me, is why we are a dumb society. People everywhere, both sides, left and right, are asking everybody to not believe what you see with your eyes because that 2 that you see is actually the Greek symbol for tree and the answer is actually tree 2. You see what I'm getting at? As stupid of an example as that sounds, when I see something with my eyes, I know it's a fact. Don't tell me some other version of it that is completely moronic.
No, I agree. Don't you think Ork and Bork from caveman days had the same problem? Differing opinions on the same thing?
I think Ork and Bork tried to get all the food that they could, and if you stole his food, Ork was going to kill you. If you looked at Bork's woman, Ork was going to kill you. So it was very basic back then.
Right.
But well, the point I'm trying to make it here is this. The thing on my screen says, is it news or opinion? Yes, there is clearly some things that are opinion. But there are a lot of things in this world that are just straight out, common sense, obvious, and then people want to tell you that it's not. Okay? Again, I go back to the flat earth thing. You have to be the dumbest MF-er in the world to think that the earth is flat. You have to be the stupidest person on this planet if you think that the earth is flat. I promise you. If you think that after millions of photos and all the scientific evidence we've had for thousands of years, for you to sit here in 2026 and think the earth is flat, you are the dumbest possible person in the world. And you know what? There are tens of millions of people out there who believe exactly what I just said.
And they're afraid they're going to fall off the edge if they go too far.
I don't know. I mean, I think we live in a world now where everybody, they want to tell you that what you've seen didn't really happen, and try to rewrite things to make you think that you're wrong, that what you saw, the 2+2 on the blackboard, is wrong, and it drives me nuts.
Well, you've got a good topic, Corey, but
this wasn't even what I wanted to talk about. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. What I wanted to get into with regards to sports fandom and like the Post-Gazette is it better or worse to be a fan now? Now, you don't know what it would have been like to be a fan 30, 40 years ago, but my question is, the question I wanted to get into today was, we can watch every game. You can watch every game. You can get analysis 24/7 on every player, every play, every game. Is that better than when ESPN first came on and you could watch a few college basketball games and you could watch a few football games, and then you would have to watch one of the greatest sailors in world history who was named?
Dan Connor?
Dennis Connor.
Dennis.
You're close.
I either get Dennis or I get Connor. I never
could
put them.
And you could watch Australian rules football, but you only got to watch a handful of games a week. Is it was being a sports fan then better or worse than being a fan now, where you can watch every game, but it also means you've got to hear Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless and these folks analyzing everything, even though they're wrong 50-75% of the time? Because if you give opinions on everything in the world, you're going to be wrong on a lot of those opinions. So I want to get to that after the break with Nathan. We kind of talked about this a little bit before. Is it better to be a fan now when you have every bit of information in the whole universe at your disposal? Or would it have been better, to just kind of have things at arm's length a little bit?
My name is Whitney Allen. I am a widow. My husband Ryan died. We never thought in a million years we'd have to use life insurance. The unexpected happened. With Ethos, it is so fast and easy. It's 100% online. You can get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same-day coverage. No medical exams, and you can get up to $3 million worth of coverage through Ethos.
Get your free quote at ethos.com/term. That's ethos.com/term.
Time spent on application may vary. Online health questions required.
You still thinking job change in the new year?
Yeah, I need something that's in high demand and more stable in this economy.
IT?
Yeah, cybersecurity, maybe even AI.
That's what I did.
Really? How?
Went to My Computer Career. You don't need any prior experience, and you could start your new career in a matter of months. A lot of IT pros go to school there, too, to level up.
Sweet. Are classes online or on campus?
Both.
Wow, I'll check it out. Thanks.
Make this your year. Take the free career evaluation now at mycomputercareer.edu, an elite CompTIA certification partner.
Financial aid is available to those who qualify, including VA benefits.
All right, I know it's a difficult thing for you to answer because you weren't a sports fan 30 years ago because you weren't alive. I will contend left and right that being a sports fan today, it is instant gratification. And you can find anything in the world that you want very, very quickly. And there is value in all of that. But I am a believer in life that less is more. If you can watch 100 games is any of those games special? Versus if you're only able to watch 8 games, wouldn't you find it more valuable in those 8 games that you could watch? You see what I'm getting at?
Well, here's the perfect example. That's why I think the NFL dominates, because there's only 6 or 17 games a year compared to hockey or the NBA, you get 82, or baseball, you get 162. So you can see right there the scarcity of it. Because if the NFL was playing every single day, I do think people would tail off and then there'd be some fatigue factor into it. So sometimes less is more. However, I do think with the availability of everything, I think it's very good. You can get anything you want, meaning if there's a blowout on one channel, you can switch over and you can get an actually competitive game that you'd want to watch. And if you're a sports fan, at the end of the day, you're going to watch what you want to watch when you want to watch it. So I know for me, like last night was the first time I ever tuned into, not ever, but the first time in a while I've tuned into Penn State basketball, and I watched a really good competitive game. If that game was 20-0, I would have switched it over, and I probably would have watched, who was it, Duke and Louisville on ESPN or something like that. But in my opinion, you giving people more options, it allows you to pick the highest quality thing you'd want to watch. If you get what I'm saying, I think that adds value to it and it keeps people more engaged. Because if I had one option and the game is 20, if Penn State was down 20 yesterday, I would have turned it off and I wouldn't have cared.
I don't quote this guy a lot. He is very intelligent, but I don't always agree with some of his conclusions. But Dave Ramsey is one of the most prominent economic people in the country. And he came out yesterday and said the fastest growing addiction that is destroying young men in their 20s is online sports gambling.
Mm-hmm. I saw this too.
FanDuel is a portal to hell. DraftKings ain't king of nothing except their own pocketbook. And they're screwing an entire generation of young men. What do you think? You are a well-rounded, you have a good foundation for a 21-year-old. You're not an idiot. So
I appreciate you giving me my highest level of respect here. I know how you think about my generation.
You're in college. You have a stable family. You have a good head on your shoulders. You're not afraid to talk to girls. Because how many of your friends your age can't speak to
a
woman?
There's a chunk of them. There's a chunk.
You're not playing video games 16 hours a day. In my book, you're a pretty stable 21-year-old
for the year
2026.
I don't get this gratitude from you.
I know numerous men in their 30s that can't talk to a girl. And that's not the be-all, end-all of what you are. But if you can't talk to a girl in your 30s and you don't know how to function in life, something went wrong. And so I'll get a little political here. I've seen some other people talk about how younger generations of young men, you want to know how they become white Christian nationalists and white supremacists, because they think the world doesn't have anything for them. No girl will talk to them. They live in their basement playing video games all day. Nobody has anything for them. That's how you end up having generations of young men watching porn that think that the world owes them something, and it doesn't. It just absolutely does. That's what I'm talking about. You don't fall into any of those categories.
I've come across many
young white men that are getting, and then you add this Dave Ramsey component to where you don't have a girlfriend, you don't have any hope in life, you're not going to college, you don't have a job, you're sitting down in mom's basement wearing your underwear, watching sport, and now you're just betting on sports all day long. I think this is what he's talking about. You're taking these younger generations of men who are already in some trouble, and now you're going to allow them to bet their ass off. And look, folks, I will be flat honest with you. There were parts of my life where I was a pretty heavy sports gambler. I've won $5 million in sports betting over my life. Maybe eight. I've won $8 million in sports betting over my life, but I've lost $8,020,000. You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
No matter how much you win, you will lose.
Yeah.
I promise you.
I'm waiting for my time because
I promise you. Now, I'm way up this year because I've made like 10 bets.
I wanted to bet the farm on Penn State plus 22.5 last night against Michigan. Penn State doesn't lose by 22.5 at home to anybody. I mean, they lost by two. At 22.5, my God, I wish I had $1 billion to bet on that.
I would
almost won the game.
I know if it wasn't for a stupid sequence at the end of the game, that was ridiculous.
But my point is what Dave Ramsey says, and this is where I go back to, is it better or worse to be a sports fan today than it was 30 years ago? Because now, look, the only time I will ever show any interest in any game pretty much is if I have money on it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you have money on a game, that game is the most important game in the history of your world, right?
Yes.
So I'll out you. You won a pretty good bit when the Ravens missed a field goal, right?
Yeah. It's
you,
pretty nice.
you had a 3-month bet on whether or not the Steelers were going to make the playoffs.
Yes.
And it came down to the last play of the season.
Yes. Could
it easily went the other way. And that's what Dave Ramsey's talking about, that we have this generation of young men out there that basically have nothing in life, have nothing going for them in the world, and yet they're going to lose their ass betting on sports.
Yeah. It's the worst addiction you can have if you can't control it. I like the thing I control, because since my initial deposit, I haven't put a single dime in sports betting, and that was, I mean,
good for you.
So, and you know, I only play with what I win.
That's good.
So once it's gone, it's gone.
Once you learn to stop doing like 10-team parlays, you will get a lot better, because that's the dumbest thing in the world. And Google it. Every sports betting writer and expert on this planet will tell you large parlays are the dumbest thing you can do. Once you figure that out, you can have a lot more success.
What usually happens is, you know,
you got a 17 parlay and you got six of them, and it's taking you 3 days,
and then
a dude misses a field goal in the seventh game, and you just lost.
It's happened, but what usually happens is I do throw those down because I like a little bit of a thrill, and you know, sometimes it gets really tight in which you can get a nice payout. But the plus 150s, the plus 250s, those are the ones that recuperate it, like those really almost safe parlays.
You're only going to get like 1 out of 10 of those, or 2 out of 30
on the plus 150s.
On the plus 250s, plus 300s.
No. If you do your research, I'm not saying I've cracked Vegas's code, not at all. But if you do your due diligence, you can find some good odds that favor you, and you can get a better payout than what you should.
Okay. All right.
That's just my opinion.
You're still only going to win 3 or 4 out of 20 plus 250s. Now, you can find ways to do it.
I would say
you can find ways to cash out when you're ahead. Say you. All right, we'll get into all that.
Okay.
All right. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Dave from Altoona.
How you doing, Dave?
Great show, Corey and Nathan. I'm 50, so it's sad that I'm even losing interest in sports. You know, like back in the day, the simplicity of life is we're losing, you know, just the simple things of, you know, and then this betting. Like, I know so many cousins that they don't even watch the game, that they're betting, like they're on their phone the whole time, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, but I wanted to bring up something positive. So we have a chance in the Steelers playoff, I think, like another home game if somehow like the Chargers beat the Patriots or something, and somehow Steelers would get 5 and would be with the Bills who are 6.
Yep.
Is that possible?
I do think that's right, Nathan. You know, if things play their way, it's
right.
The two and three seeds have to lose for the Steelers to get. So you'd have to have the Patriots lose and the Jaguars lose.
The
Jaguars, that feels they could lose, even though I think they're really a team. They could lose to the Bills, but to me right now, the Patriots and Chargers game, this feels like I don't want to say cakewalk for the Patriots, but it feels like everything's set up in there. Well, I'm sure we'll get into it later on in the week, but this feels very fortunate for the Patriots.
Corey, catching the Chargers now. Corey, this will get you. So, will you still be working for the radio show if the Steelers win it all and then Tomlin is still the coach for, like you were saying, 20 years from now?
I don't know. What was it, Nathan, I lost my mind and said, if this happens, I'm not going to do this show anymore? What was that all about? Can you remember? Was it something to do with James Franklin?
It was Urban Meyer coming.
It was Urban Meyer. That's right. The only promise, Dave, I've ever made was that if Penn State hired Urban Meyer, especially if you heard what I said yesterday, say, my God, there's no way in the world I would want to do this if Urban Meyer were the coach of there.
Hey, listen, I get it. If Tomlin goes on, wins the Super Bowl this year, he might earn a lifetime contract. But we saw it yesterday. The NFL is very replaceable. They are willing to move off you. Another guy there, 18 years, gets canned yesterday. Right. Crazy.
Yep. Dave, good stuff, buddy. Appreciate it.
I was stunned when I saw that news yesterday. I didn't think they were actually going to pull the trigger.
Yeah, interesting. All right, welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Dave from Hollidaysburg.
Oh, we got back-to-back Daves. Okay, I thought my screen was messed up here. Another Dave. What's up, buddy?
Hey, I think there's more games and more information out there. I've never bet, so I can't really comment on the gambling element. Obviously, for a lot of people, that makes the games more enjoyable in the sense they have a stake in the game. But I will say I think that, 20 or 30 years ago, being a fan was more enjoyable than it is now, because back then, and I sound like an old person because I am, but I think back then you could identify with the teams, you could invest on an emotional level, psychological level with teams. You knew the players stayed, like for college, they stayed in college and played 4 years. You could identify with them, you formed a bond with the team, and the same thing with the NFL, players didn't move that much. They stayed with the team. And I think at that point, once you're invested in the team and you have an emotional stake with the team, I think the games mean more. Now, when they lose, obviously it's a setback to you, but I think the enjoyment is greater, even though I think being a fan is easier now because of the deluge of information that's out there about the teams. If you're talking college football, the recruits, and you can get lost in all that. But I don't think it's as enjoyable because you don't have as much an emotional bond with the teams as you did back then. I mean, Corey, with you, with Syracuse basketball, you formed, I'm not saying a bond, but you formed a connection to Pearl Washington, right?
Yep. Hey, listen, I'll stop you because, Dave, I agree with every single thing that you said 1,000,000%, but I'm sitting 5 feet from a 21-year-old who I'm guessing doesn't agree with anything you're saying.
I agree with everything you said.
Oh, because you typically say that you can be a good fan. You can be a fan. I can't even be a fan now, Nathan.
Well, I
can't even be a fan of these teams because I don't even know who the hell's on the team. And that's kind of what Dave said. But you people in your generation, they still find ways to be fans.
Well, I'll disagree with you because now I feel like we know where, at least if you're tuned in, you can know where everybody's going and all this stuff. There's a lot of movement. But
if you're tuned in. If you want to live it 24/7.
Yes.
Dave, you on Twitter 24/7 and know where every recruit is visiting every second of the day?
No, but I have a friend of mine. His son immerses himself, and he can tell us statistics. They can tell us, the guy's favorite pet name and everything else.
But here's where I agree with Dave. I do think that, especially with gambling and fantasy football, we talked about it, is so much easier now to, like, because I'll tell you what, in the Ravens game, the first play, I did think Derrick Henry was going to have a good game. I had a different bet on Derrick Henry having a ton of rushing yards. In the first run, he had 41 yards, and I'm like, crap. But I'm like, but it does help the bet. So, I mean, if you know what
exactly,
I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I think of that.
Absolutely.
And then it's the same thing with fantasy where it's like, okay, Listen, the Steelers are going up against the Lions this week, but I have Jahmyr Gibbs. So part of me is like, if he scores 3 touchdowns, okay.
I'll put it like this. Dave, see if you agree with this. There's every reason in the world to follow sports now, but I don't think there's any reason in the world to really be a fan.
Well, I think that, I agree with that. And I think getting back to the premise of this whole conversation is, one of the greatest games I ever watched in basketball, I think, Corey, you might agree with me, was Villanova and Georgetown.
Yeah.
Because you knew the players, you had seen them play, you'd seen them play for championships. The build-up to the game was great because you knew the players. You could probably, Corey, quote to me the starting five for Georgetown and the starting five for Villanova. Now I can't even know who starts for Villanova. I don't even know who the coach is. And to some extent, because you have an investment an emotional investment, it makes the game more important and more significant to you, and a something you're going to remember down the road. And, you know, watching Villanova pull that game off was unbelievable. And to me, that's, I hate to use the term, more of a true fan about the game, any interest, you know, whatever the case may be. But to some extent, are you a fan because your money's riding on the game, or are you a better, quote, better fan because you have an emotional investment in whatever the game is or whatever the team is?
Yeah, that's, you nailed it. I am literally only a fan of whatever will win my bet. And I do remember four Villanova starters. You had Ed Pinckney, Gary McLean, Dwayne McLean, and Harold Jensen. So I remember watching that game as a little kid and didn't really fully know what the hell I was watching. But thanks for sharing that memory, man. We'll get to more calls after this.
Hi, it's Steve Willett inviting you to tune in each morning to the Hank Morning Show. I'm here Monday through Friday, 6 to 10, and my schedule of entertainment includes your early morning dose of knowledge in the form of random facts. We've got the daily top five lists, stupid news, plus dad joke theater, morning shower thoughts, and not headline news. It's all coming up weekday morning, 6 to 10. Yours truly, Steve Willett, right here on 1370 AM and 96.1 Hank FM, as well as the Leitner radio app.
Leitner Communications, hats off to heroes. Every day we salute a local first responder who puts their life on the line for us every day. If you know of a first responder we can salute, please go to any of our station websites or leitnercommunications.com and fill out the form. Hats off to heroes is brought to you by
Ron Beatty Carpet and Upholstery Cleaning, Brent Cogan Electrical Services, Neely's Train Shop, Polish Pottery, and more, and 3 Echo Emergency Solutions.
Listen weekdays as we take our hats off to heroes.
Here's what's happening in Hank.
The first Hollidaysburg Church's Free Soup Saturday of the new year will be January 10th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at St. Michael Church, Montgomery and Spruce Streets. There'll be a selection of homemade soups, bread and butter, dessert, and beverages. A free will donation will be appreciated but not mandatory. Everyone is welcome to attend. Have a nonprofit event? Send it to us 2.5 weeks in advance at the events tab of our station's website.
We play the legends of country, Hank FM, Hank FM.
Good discussions. I don't know what the hell we're talking about, but
we've gone on like eight different topics.
Hey, you want me to talk some politics some more?
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
Let's talk about
that
January 6th. Dan, what's going on, Dan?
Well, Nate and Corey. You mentioned one thing about being grounded. See, and you mentioned Nate being grounded. Well, he certainly is for 21 years old.
I agree. Yep.
Yeah, and so do I. I agree with him. From day one, he really blew my mind. With the knowledge, he was 19.
Now, let's not get out of hand giving Nathan such a big head here.
No, but he was 19 the first day you brought him in. See, and
that's right. Now, yeah, you were 19, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
It's weird how long I've been doing this. Sorry.
His voice is getting a little better.
I appreciate that, Dan, trying to improve every single day.
And the thing of it is, you still talk a little too fast.
I can't shake that habit.
I'm going to disagree with you there, Dan. Dan's been on Nathan for a year. I think what's happened here, if you've noticed, you won't offend me if you agree with this. I've started talking a whole hell of a lot more, like the last six months.
Yeah,
I talk a lot more, so I don't even give Nathan many opportunities to say anything.
I choose my words wisely, and I carefully craft them. So
I'm not really sure why that happened. I
think you've gotten a little more emotional in the last six months.
I think I get fired up about stuff like the James Franklin stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like I can go on for four or five, which I don't want to do.
It does happen.
You're probably sitting over there when I'm 8 minutes deep into a diatribe. Why the hell am I even here?
I said one sentence 9 minutes in. I was looking at the clock.
I was on fire today.
You were hot. You were hot.
Anything else, Dan?
Yeah, now he got a lot better with football with Dave Shannon. See, The first couple games, he was off the chart being too fast. Then I mentioned something to him, and then Dave must have mentioned to him, because then he got more in the flow of the game, see? And he knew, he basically knew sometimes where the play was going to go, or he suggested a play, see? And that's fantastic. That's what he fed off Dave Shannon. See, he for that. He fed him for the amount of games. Now, see, I didn't listen to all the games because there was other games going on that were closer than the ones that you were at, see.
Let me just say this cause, to close because I want to take one more call. I would just say that for me, the bottom line, when we're talking about young people, I just hope young people will take the time to find out information. When I say that Nathan is grounded, what I'm talking about is people, whether you're 15 or 55, if you're just going to read one headline and that's going to formulate your opinion on the world, you're wrong. That's not the way the world works. It can stimulate your interest in a subject, then go read somebody else's take on it. Mm-hmm. Then go read somebody else's take on it. Give yourself a 15-minute window of a rabbit hole to see if you can get three or four different spins on it. Then come up with an opinion.
Yeah.
What happens nowadays, and again, I think especially stupid young people.
Why did you point it?
My hand did kind of angle toward Nate. I think stupid young people who have a five-second attention span will read a headline or watch a five-second video, and their opinion is shaped about the world.
This is what I do. I remember that information, but it's never an opinion. It's always in the back of my mind, but I never say anything unless I'm damn sure of it, and I've already done a little bit of research on it and a little bit of due diligence. If I just see a headline, I'm not taking it as gospel. I got to make sure I see a couple different things from different outlets, and then I start to formulate an opinion off of that.
Right, let's go to Clarkster to finish things up. What do you got, buddy? There we go. Sorry, Clarkster. Go ahead, man.
It the five starters was McLean, Jensen, Presley, and Pinkney.
Presley, that's the one I forgot. Yeah, Harold Presley. Quick, that was a good player.
The fact that I can talk to you is also another thing that killed newspapers.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. I've been doing this 17 years, which took away some of my time with newspaper reporting.
And they didn't know how to combat it.
No.
They didn't make the transition to cable. They could have done reporting under what cable was supposed to provide was local outlets, and that was never capitalized on. And they could have transitioned, 30, 40 years ago into that, and they never made it. So now they become obsolete, and nobody's going to spend the amount that they want you for a subscription.
Hey, look, I look at it from both perspectives. A very small local newspaper like the Altoona Mirror does a great service going out and covering all these high school games so that all you parents and grandparents can see your kids' names in the paper. I see my kids' name in the paper all the time for literally it is that's a powerful thing. But at the same time, there's no money in this stuff. There's no money in that industry. In all honesty, Penn State or any university that's still offering a journalism degree, they're robbing you. They're absolutely robbing kids.
That's absolutely why I did not go into journalism.
It's highway robbery to think that these universities believe that a degree in journalism is worth the amount of money that you're paying. That's absolute. This is part of my beef about colleges. Colleges need to understand that they're trying to help people better themselves for the world, and you're going to go offer majors in 17th century French painting. All right, you're not doing these people a service.
They never created a presence on cable with their news bureaus reporting from the local areas that they're covering.
Yeah, there's no way to make money on it. And then when the web became...
They never capitalized.
When the web became big, newspapers were, by and large, still afraid, didn't know how to make money on the web, and that's basically... But you can get information for free anywhere now. That's essentially what has killed newspapers.
Yeah, well, anyway, talk to you next time.
Thanks, buddy. We got a minute to go, Nathan. Like, did you grow up reading the newspaper? You said you watched TV news. Did you ever grow up reading the newspaper or just, picking out who won a game here or there?
I'm gonna be honest. I think we need one more break in here. So.
Actually, no. I thought we did too.
Oh, we're. Okay.
I thought we did too. And I looked up a minute ago, and it said Sports Central closed. I'm like,
all right.
Did we take three?
I think we took two. I don't know what happened. Ah, whatever. All right. So.
I think Doug's like, they're on a roll over here. Corey's getting into January 6th. We'll just let him go. We'll let him hang himself.
Yeah, I mean, you're celebrating your favorite holiday, Corey.
Yeah. Did you grow up reading newspapers though?
I mean, I would look at them. I didn't. They were always just around because we got the paper at our
house.
So
you didn't read every story that I wrote, you bastard?
I'm sorry, I did not. But if it was there, like usually I'd like look.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd flip right to the sports section.
Yeah, you'd flip to the sports section, you'd look at a score of a game that you cared about.
Yes, and I mean, back I remember.
You read Corey Geiger's Penn State coverage, award-winning Penn State coverage.
Of course, absolutely, religiously. I mean, I read it two or three times. I loved Corey Geiger's articles
absolutely.
At the ripe age of five. So.
Have a good night, everybody. No politics tomorrow, hopefully.
Sports Central is an exclusive presentation of 96.1 Hank FM. WKMC Roaring Spring Altoona. Hank is W.